the coach should always leave the person they're with a little better than they found them, right? With every interaction, with everything that they say, because as we identified today, your word, if you're put in that role of coach, you have an authority and those words have power.
Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Sell or Die podcast, the global premier personal development and sales podcast on the planet. It's the fucking 2 million download podcast that everybody's talking about because they get information they can actually use. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. I wrote the Little Red Book of Selling and my latest book, Get Shit Done. And I'd like to introduce you to my fabulous wife.
Hello, hello. I'm Jen Gittimer, author of Sales in a New York Minute. And on the show, we interview leaders in business, leaders in sales, leaders in personal development, people who are going to give you the strategies it takes to make more sales, have fun, and make more money.
Listen up, everybody. Grab a pencil, grab a pen, grab your phone, grab anything that's near you, take notes, and put it into action.
All right, let's get into it. It's time to sell or die.
We are live in the studio with the great Martin Rooney. And keep in mind that you may not know him as the great Martin Rooney. You might not even know who the hell Martin Rooney is. However, I do, and Jen do. And we're going to share with you so that you do. He has written, this is his third book.
What's the fourth book with a big publisher?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, because you had the exercise books as well.
Yeah.
But I know Martin by Rooney's Rules, which was the first book that I was given by him when we first met. And then he wrote another book with all of his wisdom called The Five Things. And now he has Coach to Coach, which is a book about coaches, obviously. But the unobvious part is how little people realize that they coach. And I'll give you a classic example. My wife, the great Jen Gittimer, coaches her stepdaughter, the great Gabrielle Gittimer, and doesn't understand that she's coaching because she looks at herself as stepmom. But she coaches her how to put makeup on, how to get dressed right.
She coaches me how to put makeup on.
Or how to set your cell phone up. But there are things that people do in their everyday lives that they don't realize they're coaching. Even how to cook a brownie or how to prepare a meal. I teach Gabrielle how to cook a pancake. And she goes, Daddy, can I do that? And now she's coaching and getting it by doing. That's the whole deal. And so this book is miraculous. But people don't know it yet because they haven't bought it or read it, which is bullshit because I want you to go to Amazon right now and Coach to Coach. All you have to do is hit the Buy Now button.
So, Martin, tell us a little bit about your background
for those people who
have no clue who you are and why they should even listen to this episode.
Yeah.
Well, hey, I'll give you the fast version, which you guys know. So it's kind of funny because I'm telling you, but hey, for everybody listening, I was originally from New Jersey, was a track and field athlete, went on a Division I scholarship for track and field, and then went on because everybody in the world said, man, you probably want to be a physical therapist. So what do you do when everybody says that? You go to more school. And
they were coaching you.
Yeah, I got coached to be a physical therapist, and we'll get back to that in a second, but in a weird twist of fate, I ended up making the U.S. bobsled team. And I represented the U.S., lived at the Olympic Training Center for a while. But when that Olympic dream was over, I went and became a physical therapist because that's what everybody said. And don't get me wrong, because if my old friends are listening, the people I worked with, I really like them. But I really realized that that wasn't my passion. That wasn't what I wanted to do with my life. And as a result, I wasn't chasing it down. I wasn't improving. I was getting the Monday blues and the Sunday sads, you know, in my gut. And I just realized I wanted to still be around sports. I wanted to be around fitness. That was my passion. But the whole world was telling me, you can't do that. And you're not going to make a living with that. And actually, to be honest, my mom just liked telling everybody her son was a physical therapist, I think was what it was. But I made this leap. I met a friend. We started and launched a national franchise for sports performance, which didn't exist at the time. You know, now kids lift weights, kids are training for sports. 20-something years ago, this was a crazy idea where mm-hmm. people thought we were nuts, but it grew and it grew.
And they were, and wait, they were off. Right. They were correct.
No, they weren't nuts. Well, now we look like geniuses.
I feel like when someone tells me I'm nuts, I love it.
Yeah,
I think it's a total compliment. Oh, Gimmer,
you're not hearing.
Thanks.
Yeah, if you're not hearing, you're crazy sometimes. Then you're not pushing enough buttons. And here's what's interesting. Now, a million kids later with that company, but I got to coach in the NFL. I sent hundreds of guys to the NFL, $1 billion in contracts. I've trained Olympians, medalists, UFC champion fighters, and that spun off my current company called Training for Warriors, where now thousands of people a day are getting coached in that too.
Are you a black belt?
Yeah, so you know, that's another part of the history is I befriended all these world-class fighters when everybody said fighting was crazy and not cool and no one should do it. And I became the guy in that and wrote a number of books on that too, and then studied it and trained it so I could learn to coach them better too.
See, it's how one coach by doing is because they're going to listen to you like I'm a black belt. But if you go in and say I'm a white belt, they're not going to listen to one damn word you say.
Yeah, well, and that's the same as would you go to a piano teacher that doesn't play piano or
no.
A dentist
no.
with wooden teeth. So,
no.
So one thing I will say
or
though,
a child
is,
therapist without a kid.
But ultimately, all of this stuff, what I really came to the conclusion was it wasn't sports or the martial arts or NFL or all these things that I was most interested in. What I found where I was making my greatest impact was coaching someone else. Because as you described it, you coach Gabriella, then Gabriella coaches somebody else. And this, there's this, I call it this rock that you drop into somebody's life. And not only the ripples go out in their lives, but then they're dropping rocks. And so now ultimately my mission is to create a world of better coaches. Because I believe if we did that, a lot of problems go away. And that's the purpose of the book, that everybody is a coach, but not a lot of people either identify with it or know how to do it.
So diehards, here's my challenge to you. I want you to think about the first time someone gave you a life lesson that you now remember, like it was your name, and recognize that they were not giving you a lesson, they were coaching you. Without knowing it, they were coaching you. And I'm going to give you an example. I'm at my grandfather and my father's motel in Atlantic City, New Jersey, and it is in the 50s. To give you an idea, it was $9 a night to stay in the motel, and they were afraid to raise it to 10 because they thought no one would come.
Wow.
Okay. Coke were a nickel, and you put them in the machine, and you could see where it was from by looking at the bottom of the bottle. And if it was really cool, they were like frozen when you, you know what I mean?
This is making you sound old, honey.
It is. Okay, believe me, I am old. So I'm in the registration lobby one afternoon, and some old man comes in there, and he's smoking a cigarette that he rolled by himself, a hand-rolled cigarette. And he took it out of his mouth, and he put it in the ashtray, and it was like all like slimy kind of. Like it had nicotine in it or whatever the drug is that's in there. And I looked at it and he saw me looking at it and he looked at me and he said, never smoke. And I said, okay, you know, I'm a kid. I don't think I was 10. So I'm not going to do that. I mean, that guy was giving me a life lesson because he did smoke and he recognized what the shit was of it. And maybe I didn't have it completely sink in at that age, but I never smoked.
Wow.
Well, and the lucky part about it, or the stuff that I deep dive into about coaching is, and you see, that guy coached in a good way.
Yep.
But see, for every story there is like that, everybody I talk to, it doesn't matter who it is. See, that's the thing. It's not about sports, male or female, young or old. Everybody also got the bad advice too, or the bad coaching. They either heard something they can't do, or the guy could have said, hey kid, you'll never be anything. You're the son of a motel guy. And you know, and if you raise it to 10 bucks a night, you guys will all fail.
Yeah.
And you could be remembering that right now too. And
well, I gotta throw two more things in there. My grandmother and my mother and my father would admonish my grandfather for giving us a dollar every time we showed up, but he always gave us a dollar. So like, okay, that's number one. Number two, we had a family that led with humor. No matter where we were, something funny always turned up. And at the motel, they had a swimming pool, and I can remember it like my name. There was a sign at the pool that said, we don't swim in your toilet. please don't pee in our pool. And there was a guy, the sign had a guy with his head sticking out of a toilet with a snorkel on.
Oh, but here's
the
thing,
but look, so, and now you, all these years later, because look, you said my family used humor. You guys are coaching each other up with humor. That sign's coaching up with humor.
Oh,
but
lead
now
with humor.
You are.
Yeah.
All the,
yeah. Yeah.
Think funny first.
Okay, wait, so let's go back to this idea. So for our diehards who are listening, who feel like, hey, I'm an entrepreneur, I'm a business owner, or I'm a salesperson. I help people, I sell things, I give value, but they don't identify
with coach.
As being a coach. What would you tell them?
I would say, you better start identifying being a coach if you want to be successful. And it's interesting. Here would be an example. I spoke at Prudential Financial. It was a big event. And my speech was, you're a financial coach. You know, you're not a financial advisor. You're not a wealth specialist. But man, you coach people. I sat everybody down. I said, what do you do? And it's like, man, I'm giving this advice, or I'm trying to tell people what they need to do with their money, the most important decisions they're going to make in their lives. And I said, so essentially you're coaching these people to do this. And that's when it clicked. And then they start to identify with that concept. And then they start to act way different, you know? And so I would advise anybody, hey, I run multiple businesses and I am I call myself the head coach. I don't call myself the CEO or the founder or, you know, give myself some title. I'm the head coach of the company because I'm coaching everybody else under me. In my home, I'm the head coach.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. You got four girls and you can't be.
Yeah, and I can't control any of them.
Right. But here's the deal. And this is what diehards, I want you to understand. Martin Rooney is not just a coach, he is a world-class coach. And teaches other amazing fitness people how to do it all over the world. I mean, from Australia to Finland to Germany, you name it, he goes all over, sometimes speaking in their language.
Well, one thing I'll say about that for anybody listening too is I've had the opportunity to say all these cool things, and some of them I didn't say. Yeah, I've worked with a lot of Fortune 500 companies. I have a really incredible Hasbro story that maybe we'll share too on coaching. But I've worked with the United States military, Army Rangers, Navy SEALs. But here's what I will say that's the most important part. In all of those things, from the state championships to the Super Bowl when we were working with the Giants, the UFC championships, the gold medals, I only know the stuff that I know right now because I've made tremendous bad mistakes. I have failed. There's been $500,000 errors. You know, I have had my back up against the wall by either letting ego play in there or just coaching incorrectly.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that I'm saying right now, what I want everybody to understand is we're almost at 30 years of experience in this role that I've had. And the job also of a coach, you're like this, I've been, because having gone so deep into the idea, the job of a coach is to help people solve problems. Like that's what it is. It's to get a result by solving their problem. And the only way I think a coach has to be able to do that is they've had to have had some similar problems. And like I like to say is if I'm going to go to a coach, for instance, hey, Jeffrey, whether I need to know things about books, marketing, sales, business, speaking, I come to you. You know why? Because you did it. You know, and then I can say, show me how you did it, coach. Not, hey, tell me what you think, person that knows nothing about this.
I'm so honored when he calls me sensei.
Yeah, so aww. Yeah, so that is my nickname for Jeffrey. So nobody steal that, diehards, if you're listening to that. But I always say, hey, sensei, which, you know, when I was a judoka, you know, predominantly that is really telling the role of teacher and really what teacher is synonymous with coach. So, and I say that, you know, with good reverence too and mean it, but everybody, so what's the other lesson there? Hey, who's your coach right now? So just because you're the owner of your business, do you got coaches?
You may have a coach and not realize it. You may look at them as a mentor. You may look at them as a strategist or an advisor or
colleague,
even a boss.
Colleague, friend. Yeah. People, that's the other part too, is coaching happens in every direction. I mean, I get, you know how much coaching I get from even within my own network? So we have thousands of people within Training for Warriors around the world. I don't come up with all the ideas.
Right.
I never did. If I had to, I would lose my mind. But these people are bringing you stuff, just like whether it would be an NFL team or somewhere else. The ideas, they can coach up the chain too, right? And I don't know. But here's an important topic that I've been hitting a lot too, which hopefully hits a nerve with everybody. Just because either you're running the business or you're running the family or you do even put coach on the back of your shirt, that doesn't mean it's time to stop learning or you can't admit you don't know.
Agreed.
Some answers.
Yeah, I totally
and
agree.
This is what I find a lot is it's like we aspire to this position and now we're the coach and we're too afraid to admit we don't know, or we're going to let ego get in the way, where the more I learn about stuff, the less I realize I know. And the coach has to be a lifelong student. And hey, love him or hate him, when you look at guys like Bill Belichick, who arguably, hey, 21 straight years winning records, an average of about 12-4 in the NFL, when you look at his history, he's the ultimate student.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I remember, you know, and not only that, but his father was before him, talk about who was coaching who. A lot of people don't know that. His father wrote the book on scouting other teams and football in general. But then a couple famous stories you'll like about this. Belichick, when he was the defensive coordinator for the Giants, when they were winning Super Bowls with Parcells, there was this old story that, like, he'd always be in the film room and just watching tape and just always trying to get better. And Parcells and the rest of the coaches, they were going to go out to dinner, they're going to go get drinks, and they always knew what the answer would be, but they'd always go and check with Bill. And they'd say, hey, Bill, we're going out for dinner. You want to go? And he would always have the same answer. He would say, yeah, I'll be there in a couple minutes, just going to watch a little more tape. And they knew he was not coming. And actually, he was going to be sleeping on that desk that he was working at. And he's been living with that same kind of philosophy.
And work ethic.
20, 30 years later until, and for anybody that doesn't know Jeffrey, or he's never done a tour of the I don't know what to describe it, the museum, the Gittimer Museum, the Gittimer mansion. I don't know what it is, but we just did a tour again, which I like to do every time I'm here. Never gets old. You can't see enough of it. The interesting thing is what we always tour and where do we spend the most time was in the library.
Of course.
And there's another famous interview. Now Belichick has made it right now. He's won a bunch of Super Bowls and he's done this. And, a famous Boston sports writer, I think it's Bob Ryan or I forget his name, but he gets to go to Belichick's house and he goes to his house and he says, show me your greatest stuff. You know, show me the trophies. Let's see it. And, he's thinking he's going to see Super Bowl stuff or Coach of the Year awards. And they walk into Bill Belichick's library.
Cool.
And do you know what the reporter says? Reporter goes, that's it?
Yeah.
And he goes, that's it. Don't you realize, man, I've amassed the greatest football library in the world. No one knows more than me. I've read all of these books. So how can anybody compete against me? And that guy thought, that's it, right? So I'm saying all the diehards right now, if you are a coach, you think you're a coach, number one, how big is your library? Because it should always be growing. It can't be big enough. But if you think, now I've made it, so like that's it, the library's not important anymore, I don't have to learn anymore, that's the minute you're going to lose that business or not help the people move forward.
Jen, how much coaching you take right now? Come on.
Like the investments I've made in coaching?
Not the investments. Forget about the dollars. Let's talk about the hours.
Oh. I would say I attend coaching calls with my coaches 2 to 5 hours a week.
At least. Yeah. Well, I'm going to say sometimes it's 2 to 5 hours in a day.
And every quarter there's like a 2 or 3 day event that I participate in where the entire day is dedicated to personal development.
Well, and here's what I would say though, for Jen being, well, this is important. Here's a cool idea. Ready? You know what? One of the most important things is you got to have to be a great coach. You got to be coachable.
Right.
Right.
You have to be a great student.
And hey, every time we spend time together, you'll always say, hey, tell me about this or how do I do that or what's going on with this?
Yeah.
And it could be from the book to health and fitness to a lot of stuff. So here's the interesting part and why Jen is always going to be successful, because she's not afraid to ask the questions. Because you know what's interesting too? Here would be a great thing. You ready? You want to know the best question you can ask a coach. You ready?
Tell us.
Or how do you do that?
Yeah.
You know, how do you do that? Oh, hey, coach, you got a best-selling book. How do you do that? Hey, you're a world-class speaker. How do you do that? Hey, you've got the fitness level I want. How do you do that? And most people that are business owners or all these other things, they forgot that question because they feel like they're admitting they don't know something.
They're embarrassed. Yeah. Yeah.
So
get over it.
When I was selling textile screen printing consulting, I would go into somebody's place of business, get the owner, and say, hey, show me the best shirt you ever printed. And he would come out with the shirt, and I would say, wow, how'd you do that? And he'd say, I can't tell you, it's a secret. I said, well, how about if I tell you? And I would tell him exactly what screen to use, what ink to use, what temperature you use to dry it, the whole nine yards. And he'd go, oh. I said, would you like to see some of my shirts? and I had this green suitcase, and I'd unzip it and show them like the greatest shirts, you know, and I'd tell them to back off a little bit because I didn't want them drooling on my shirts.
Yeah.
The bright, right. And he'd go, wow, how'd you do that? I said, can't tell you, it's a secret. but he, I got hired as a result of that interchange. Yeah.
Jeffrey, what's that in your coffee cup?
What do you think it is, Jen? It's Death Wish Coffee. It's the only coffee I drink. Death Wish is the world's strongest coffee, and the world's strongest salesperson needs the world's strongest coffee.
Jeffrey and I drink it, and diehards, you need to be drinking it too. It'll help you wake up and smell the order forms. They have 100% no bullshit money back guarantee, so go get your first bag or first box of K-Cups of the world's strongest coffee at deathwishcoffee.com.
So what does an order form smell like?
So I want to go back because you said that everyone's a coach. And so our diehards who didn't come into this episode feeling like they're a coach, who now want to be a coach, what's like the framework or the process they need to use to be a great coach?
No, I love it. And that's what's interesting is, here's another, and we're hitting on, and there's so many things that we're going to hit on with this, but everybody, if you're listening, the odds are hopefully you went to high school, or you might have gone to college, or hey, even you went on to some MBA.
Or you might have dropped out of college.
Yeah, or who knows what, you know.
Hello.
But either way, you got a bunch of education, but a lot of times that knowledge is in whatever the thing is. So hey, if I wanted to study business, then they're teaching you marketing or this or that or this. But No one gets usually what I say is courses in the things that are the really important stuff or the things that we actually use all the time. So what's interesting is we just created a hole right there for people where I always say people have a lot of knowledge, but man, they can't get anybody to do it. Like that's the definition of a coach. So
you already know what to do. You're just not doing it.
Yeah. Or here'd be a great example. How many hours of sleep do you need a night?
Seven, eight.
Eight.
Yeah, eight. So the answer is eight. And then I say to these people, at least say in fitness, I'll say, well, do you get everybody that you work with to do that? And then they put their head down and they realize they don't get anybody to do that.
Do you feel the coaches are responsible for the actions other people take?
I would say the coach is paid to produce a result. And if that result is something that they want, for instance, if it's fitness, you want that person getting 8 hours of sleep. And, you know, and there are ways to coach to make sure that that happens. But what I'm getting at backwards again is if we just have all the knowledge and we pursue this knowledge, but we don't understand how to coach, you know, that's what you were saying. Like,
right.
Okay, where do I start?
Right.
And that's, one great place to start would be with the new book, Coach to Coach, which I think gives
where do you
a
get
framework.
That?
You can get that anywhere books are sold and on Amazon. The cool news is thousands of people have already pre-ordered. I can't wait to see what this is going to do. So hopefully everybody helps. And it's a simple, easy read, easy parable, and gives you a lot of that. But what I would say is then it becomes going on a journey. It might be getting involved with coaches. It might be digging deeper into other material. So my book isn't the be all end all, but there are books out there on how to do it. We're just opening the conversation.
Hold on. Right.
You
the book is the appetizer.
Yeah.
To make people hungry to get more of the main course of life. And this book of Martin's, I will guarantee you, will whet your appetite to a point where you will want to learn more and do more.
Well, I'll even take it a step further. So you guys go to Paris, right?
Yeah.
Now, have you been to Paris and had some food and it was like, okay, you went somewhere and it wasn't great?
Yeah, a couple
Not
times.
Really.
A couple times. Yeah.
But maybe it, say once. A couple times.
Yeah.
Did you go back?
Nope.
But did you go somewhere where it was great?
Yep.
Yeah.
Nessie, did you go back?
Yep.
And here's what I always say about that one. And guys, this is just not for what I'm trying to be here, but also for you as a coach. See, my book, the most important thing you have to do when writing a book, everybody listening, if you want to write one, the most important thing you have to do to write a book is not to market the book. It's not to create the cover for the book. It's to write a really good book, right? Because
right.
That's how it'll go.
Exactly.
And so this book, guys, I'm going to make you a promise. It's going to change you. And because I'm not trying to be an okay chef, I'm trying to be a great chef, mm-hmm. because a great chef always leaves you hungry for more, right? And that's exactly what Jeffrey was saying, that the book isn't the be all end all, but it's going to get you started. And then it leads to the next book and to the next book of, man, I want to understand more about coaching. And so this is the hardest part, is there is no answer. It's not like, hey, I can go to my coaching MBA program now taught by the greatest coaches in the world or their principals.
Coach K doesn't have a course yet.
Yeah. But I'll tell you what, but he does have a number of great books. You know, there's one called Leading with Heart. So what I would say is there's some essential reading. If you like the sports analogy, but there are business leaders that wrote incredible books about coaching. So that's the need I'm trying to fill with Coach to Coach is I've read them all, but it's like you got to pick a nugget out of each book. They don't all come together. I believe Coach to Coach, it weaves a tapestry of all these great ideas together to get people started.
Just to bring Coach K back into it for just one second, he learned coaching from Bobby Knight.
Yeah, well, at Army, you know, so he played at Army, played under him, then coached at Army. Yeah. And talk about, like, here's an interesting thing we could talk about too, Bobby Knight and John Wooden.
Yep.
Two totally different people, two people got results, two very different coaching styles.
Totally.
So that's the other part too, is how you coach might be different than how I coach, but it'll still be effective. Whereas, say we're talking about like the Olympic discus throw. If you watch two of those, they're really close, like very, very similar. Like there's some things, it's a skill or something, but coaching involves, it's so interpersonal that there's a lot of ways to do it. You know,
Al Order.
Yeah.
Can we ask you a personal question?
Yeah, depends on what it is.
Okay, so you have a daughter. And
no, four daughters.
Yes, but you have a daughter who is very into track and field, yeah. Right? Track. And can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, hey, one thing I'll say right off, if anybody's listening in the diehards, I've coached at every level. So from Olympic gold medal, I don't think it gets higher than that, to Super Bowl champ, to UFC champ, to world champ. And I don't use that word lightly. That means number one on planet Earth out of 8 billion people. But I have found the hardest person in the world to coach is your 16-year-old daughter.
So that's what I was going to ask about. What's it like coaching someone in your family versus coaching a total stranger that came to you and is paying you for that help?
I'll tell you a couple things, because this should hit home with a lot of people. First thing is, it's an evolution. So when my daughter was very young, say about 2 days old, that's when the training started. So we've been on about a 16 and a half year journey here. And when she was very young, one thing that I can tell everybody is just be excited about stuff and immerse them in that. So for instance, she just always saw me training and at the gym, so they think that's normal. I wasn't doing any coaching particularly, but I really was, because that was what we did.
And it was by example.
Right.
At first, and then we would start to train, and then, hey, the coach has to direct for people. Remember, I wasn't going to when she's 7 or 8, I'm not going to her for financial advice or business advice. So no. I'm not going to go to her for life advice either, but I had a vision. You know, I was seeing her gifts and the things that I thought she would be good at. That's something a coach should do too. And then I tried to maximize those. And it's interesting that last year she was number 10 in the United States in the heptathlon, which is a 7-event track and field thing. So like really cool stuff. And she won a bunch of state medals. But I'll say this, I have had to learn that as she is maturing and she's now becoming a woman, it's been much more difficult to try to figure out and how to navigate that training.
Right. One, more rebellion.
Rebellion, your dad, they don't want to hear from dad. So watch. So here's some powerful things. You ready for this? You know what I did? I got her another coach. You know, so we got other coaches that are coaching her.
Yeah.
Because I saw that I don't want to now damage the relationship. And hey, I'll tell you what, I read Andre Agassi's biography. I read Tiger Woods' biography. I read Steffi Graf. You know, when you see, hey, for every one of these superstars, I wasn't at the end of the day going to have my kid hate my guts, even though they're successful.
Yeah, right? But right. Tiger Woods, his dad was Jesus.
For sure. But what I mean is, do you see how, but I guess using that as an example, for every dad that was Tiger Woods'
dad. Yeah, there's a dad that was hated.
There's 100,000 dads that it didn't go that way, you know, because he was a unicorn, right? But
so you're saying as a coach, sometimes you need to know when you're not the right coach.
Exactly, and to defer out. But no matter what, through the whole process, I've been super, super supportive. But I've had to learn to navigate, and that's where coaching is a relationship. So I've also found out this, how you coach guys in the UFC cage is different than how you coach a bunch of high school girls. So I'm the track coach at the high school, or their high school. And so the coach is always learning, but here's the biggest secret. I've always kept their greatest successes in mind, and they know that. So the conversation, whenever my daughter and I are having a little, you know, you don't know what you're talking about, dad, and this would be a little advice for any coaches/parents out there. I always say, her name is Sophia. I say, Sophia, who cares more about you than anybody?
You do, dad.
and who knows a really lot of stuff about this thing? You do, Dad. Who on planet Earth would never say the wrong thing that could not get you the result that you want, that you said you wanted? Who would be the last person to ever do that? It's you, Dad. And then I say, then listen to me for once, you know, come on. But what are we getting at there is a coach, you got to communicate and have conversations too. And sometimes they're difficult. But those difficult conversations are where you really make the connection. And so what's the ultimate piece? And I'm a fire hose today about coaching. The ultimate foundation of everything with a coach is trust. You know, so I know my daughter trusts me implicitly that I am going to, like, I'm only in her best interests. And as a coach, I think it shouldn't just be your daughter that has to happen. It should be with everybody.
However, if you follow Martin on Instagram, which is Martin Rooney, the Martin Rooney.
Because there's a lot of them.
You'll see pictures of Sophia with medals and the pride of fatherhood that shows itself. And then she sees the pride. And what happens is she sees the result of the coaching. And I think that's as powerful as any coach piece that you can give. There has to be a result. There has to be a win or some sort of almost win as a result of it so that you feel the encouragement to go forward.
And I would agree, but everybody, it's because of what I've been doing. And where I'm lucky is the stuff that she's really excelling at is the stuff that I really know well. So I also want everybody listening that your kid doesn't have to win medals or be a world champ to be great, and that you're going to coach them and really care about them. And Jeffrey hit on something that really is sticking with me too, is I had to make a real leap. Like I mentioned today that, you know how you said, you're also a black belt, right? Or, and then I talked about the bobsled or track. I had to make a big leap at some point, and I think everybody has to do this too, is there was a time when I was the athlete and it was about me, you know? But when I really realized I made the leap to being a coach, it wasn't about me anymore. It was about them. Mm-hmm. And it's three words. So great big thing for coaches that you got to understand out there is it's about others. See, if you're coaching because you want the praise or you want the credit, you're in the wrong business, because that, unless you're in the NFL or something like that.
Be a chef.
Yeah, and NFL stands for not for long anyway, right? Yeah. But the whole thing is you're supposed to be doing this for somebody else, and then your trophy is their trophy.
So what does a coaching relationship look like when you're trying to make a sale?
Well, wow. I mean, I would say simply this, because here's the other part that a lot of people might not know is, I've been deeply involved in sales for a long time. Not only when I was a personal trainer was I having to sell personal training. Then when we were running our business, was I in charge of all the sales every day, selling $1,000 to $1,500 packages at a pop to parents that didn't have money in blue collar New Jersey. But then when we moved up the chain, then we were selling $100,000 to $500,000 all-in franchises, mm-hmm. You know, in dog and pony shows. So here's what I would say. Number one, diehards, I've spent a whole lot of time selling. So a coach is also a salesman, right? Because you got to sell your ideas and sell the fact that you are the person that's going to produce that result mm-hmm. for them. But the best way to do that is to not sit. What I always said is I never sat on the other side of the table from the people I work with and sit there and tell them what they got to do and what's going to happen. I sit on the same side of the table with them and say, we're in this together, right? So at least in the services that I always had, I almost considered it not a sale because I was giving them the best opportunity and option and joined their team. So if you can figure out a way to do that, so say you're selling real estate, like are you on their team or are you trying to sell stuff?
Commission.
Yeah. Like what are you trying to do? And that's why the coach analogy is so great. Imagine now you're their coach through this sales process and you are really taking their best interest in mind and coaching them to the best interest. And you know what? If it's not, sometimes maybe that's the best thing. Like one of the, not the hardest, but the easiest for me, but maybe hardest for somebody else is when I was selling all those packages, there were times that I knew some of the people couldn't afford it, you know? But I knew, man, I wanted to get that sale so we could hit our numbers and, you know, we got to keep the lights on in this place. But I would always be on their side of exactly what they needed. And they'll lead you to that, to understand that if you had to. So, you know, and it's funny because I don't talk about that a lot. That's that, you know what I mean? Like when you look at my social media and all my stuff,
it doesn't say great sales guys.
You see coach, you see this, but I'll tell you what, if we probably added up the either tens of or hundreds of millions of dollars of sales that I've had to be responsible for, hey, a coach is a salesman. A coach is a parent. Like, we're right. all
You're
that
selling
right
your
there.
Ideas, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But I'll let me throw something at you guys, diehards listening today. We talked a lot about athletics and we talked a lot about sales, but really, it's about anything. When you're coaching as a parent, you may be coaching your kid to be a better reader. You may be coaching them to keep the room clean, which we're having an issue with at the moment.
Well, listen to this one that's coming to mind. One of the biggest coaching breakthroughs we just came through with the kids, and hey, everybody take this one for what it's worth. We were having a real challenge. Can't get them off the phones, right? Like, they're just on the phones, they're on the phones, and now they're not getting to bed on time. And so we created a rule in the house. I got a power strip with all their charger plugs, and at 8 p.m., they got to bring their phone into my room, plug it in, and the phone is gone for the rest of the day. Let's make sure you're ready for school, you got your work done, you did all your things. And I'll tell you what, that little coaching move met with massive rebellion for my little, my phone, for the phone addicts, which was very disturbing to see how.
Yeah, because we're not addicted.
but here's what's interesting. I will say this. I know how it's affecting us, but watch this. We weren't born with it though.
Right.
See, I can remember getting my first cell phone in like 2000 and being like, I'll never need this thing. Whereas these guys have never known life without it. Yeah. And they're playing on a game that requires even more constant, from Snapchat, if anybody's familiar with that, it requires constant,
back and forth,
interaction, or you lose, or it's, and, you know, they're gamifying it. So I'll tell you what, we had to coach that up in the house. Like you were saying, how do you do that? And we knew as coaches, this is another part, when the coach knows what's best, hey, sometimes the coach, there's got to be some tough love in there too. Yeah. And the coach has to do what's right. And that's why you're the coach. And we did that. They didn't like it. But now, months in, I'll tell you what, it couldn't have been a better thing that we probably did. Because we don't know what the consequences are going to be of social media 10 years from now or 20 years from now. But I will say my kids, and they're girls too, so I pay particular attention. When they spend a lot of time on social media, they don't feel so great about themselves. They always are talking about things that they want, things that these other people have. Oh, look what this person looks like. And they don't understand it's through such an edited, filtered environment. And they're comparing themselves to that, where again, as the coach, I got to keep stepping in, you know, like little conversations. And if it's resonating with you, when your little daughter says, oh, dad, am I overweight? Or hey, like, am I this or that? I'll give you this line, which you'll love. Comparison is the thief of joy, right?
Ooh, that's good.
It's the thief of joy. And we are in a more comparing environment than ever. And hey, as coaches, we can step in to really, you know, maybe be the voice of reason sometimes too, or because they believe in you and they have that much trust, maybe you can give the right answer at the right time. Because what I don't, hey, social media is coaching those kids up too. So maybe that's another one.
That's
true. Be careful who your coaches are. You know?
There's a fine line between learning and comparing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, and influencing. What's this big thing now?
Feeling
I'm an influencer.
That's the thing. Yeah.
I'm an influencer. You know what influencer? You know what a coach does?
Influence.
Right.
So
right.
Like they're coaches. Like so the people and the stuff that you see, the crazy stuff that they're doing, they're getting coached. Like there's this thing called TikTok now. I'm watching my kids closely, and all it is you do all these dance routines and all this crazy stuff.
Tell me about it.
Starts to border on some weird stuff. But here's the thing: I watch my kids doing all that stuff. They got coached up. Like holy cow, they're doing this routine. Somebody coached that, and. So be careful who your kids' coaches are.
I said to Gabrielle, because she's getting me onto TikTok, and apparently old people doing TikTok can go viral.
Yeah.
So I have an opportunity to go viral because I'm old.
No, I got in one of their videos too, and then you start to really look and like, what is going
on? So I'm like, so where do you get the moves from? And she's like, you know, from the whatever house, they come up with these dance moves and you copy them. I'm like, well, why can't you come up with the dance moves and you be copied? And she's like, no, Jen, that's not how it works.
Exactly.
And I'm like,
and what's
it
teaching there?
But why do you have to copy them? Why can't you create, you have moves, like you create the moves.
And it's like, no way. So that's what I mean.
You should see her moves, though.
Yeah. Oh, no, all of them. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, that's what I was saying.
I watch my kids, and I'm like,
impressive.
What's going on?
It's impressive.
But they're being coached.
Right.
And they're being coached to practice that. But here's what I would say. Unless her goal is to do something bigger with it, there's a huge investment in time being coached up by something else that is that creating any value,
right.
You know? And but hey, that's our decision as parents or coaches,
so,
too.
So if you're going to be on social, then you should spend an equal amount of time reading. And that way you balance your time and you balance your input to a point where it benefits you. Luckily, we have a reader.
Yeah. Yeah, we do.
No. Well, and you know, but again, and why do you have a reader? Because you got a gigantic library. Why do I have readers? Because because all they see is me reading, and then they're reading. And what did I do for them always when they were kids? I read and read and read.
Yeah.
So what did we do? We coached them, right? So you are the, you're the product of your environment. And watch this, and ready? And the coach sets that environment. So for everybody listening, coaching doesn't end when you leave your business. Coaching doesn't end when you left the sports field. Coaching goes back into your homes. And I will say this too, your family should be a more important reflection of your coaching style than your business. And how do I know that one? Because I was making big mistakes there too. I'm like, I'm this big coach, I'm this big coach. And then maybe I'm not doing the right things that I could be at home. And hey, that's where I've really stepped up and applied that philosophy that in the house, I'm the coach too. There's time to be dad. And then there's time to be the head coach. And when you're, you know, and, but this is what I'm hoping to foster with this book is we start a movement because we talked about this before we got on. I don't know if I mentioned it. My mission, and I see it so clearly, because people are only powerful when they have a mission, not just information, right? If I know all this stuff with no mission, not valuable. But my mission is to create a world of better coaches. And because I believe if there is a world of better coaches, we're going to have a world of better people, right? And then there's less problems. And what do I mean by that? The news, you watch the news, it's always a horror show. Yeah, hey, everything that's popping up on your phone, horror show. It's not a lot of good news. And whenever I see some really bad news, I see a lot of interviews and it'll be people saying, I knew that was coming. We saw that with this person. We knew it. I never see the interview with the person that said, you know what? I coached this person up for 10 years trying to do everything right and it never worked. And that's because that person didn't happen in their life. But if we had a world of more people like that, there's going to be a lot of problems that go away. And the Trojan horse to get the conversation going about coaching is this book, Coach to Coach. So it has been thought through, you know, and hey, big kudos to Jeffrey right here. We've been talking about this book for a long time. He mm-hmm. knows what I do. I travel around the world speaking on this for a decade. And you said, and it's funny, guys, it might've been even in this room. You said, if you don't write this book, I'm going to kill you. You know, he was like, if you don't write this book, I'm going to kill you. And we started writing down some ideas and some names. And the original name, one of them that we came up with, they didn't go for. So now it's Coach to Coach, which that's what it is. It's a story from a young coach to an old coach, but it's also the story of the coach and his wife, the coach and his kids, and how it all comes together. A lot of what we talked about today, but ultimately something has to get the conversation going like today did. Like hopefully anybody, any of the diehards that are listening to this, if you heard this, you're not going to think the same way again, at least hopefully for a while. And you're either going to go back to your old style or you're going to do something about
it. Yeah.
And I would hope that you do something about it. Just like this book is going to be that kick in the pants. And if enough people have read it, then it's on mission and maybe it did something great.
And the coach basically is saying the old adage of you can lead the horse to water, but you can't make him drink. But the smart coach gives you popcorn.
There's, oh, you never man. Know what the ending is, you know, going to always be on there. But yeah.
No, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for coming to our studio, for coming here in person.
You know, it was such a far trip to take that 5-hour flight. You know, that was a really tough
one. I know, baggage claim was a bitch.
Yeah, like I'm always waiting. That Uber drive was uncomfortable. No, so for everybody listening, Jeffrey and I live really close together, and this is someplace I frequent all the time. But one of the things, and I just had the conversation with my editor on the way, and what I always say is, I say, you never know what's going to happen when you go to Gittimer's.
That's true.
You never know what you're going to see.
That's true.
I'll say this. I saw a book today that I can't believe the book that I saw today. It's another book I didn't know existed that now I got to figure out how to, you know.
Get a copy.
Yeah. But you never know what you're going to see, but I always know I'm going to get coached up and I'm going to be better when I leave. And no, but watch this. That's the job of a coach too. And maybe this is important, or if we're coming to the close of the show, is the coach should always leave the person they're with a little better than they found them, right? With every interaction, with everything that they say, because as we identified today, your word, if you're put in that role of coach, you have an authority and those words have power. And those words can last a lot longer than you do, and you never know where they're going to go. And because I understand that, just like this call today, like all the diehards listening, I'm trying to coach you up. I'm not trying to make you feel worse. I'm not trying to take you in the wrong direction. I'm trying to give you something that can make you a little bit better before you listen to me. And now imagine if every interaction you had with everybody for the rest of your life did that. I'll make you this guarantee, you'll be the most popular and probably wealthy person you know, because there aren't a lot of people like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Martin.
Thank you so much.
Another fantastic episode of Sell or Die is now in the books.
Let's let the listener be the judge of that.
You can be. Subscribe, rate, and review our show today. In fact, right now.
Or if that sounds too complicated, tell a friend.
Tell both your friends.
Because if you're not selling,
you're dying.
We're leaving.
Au revoir.
Shalom.